He wouldn't know who you are yet.
Yeah, okay, that's good.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
All right, everyone, it looks like we are up and recording. Chris, or those who are recording the Zoom meeting, could you start recording for us, please?
Done. Thank you.
Recording.
Excellent. I think, Mr. Chair, we are ready to go.
Thank you so much. I'll call to order the slightly irregular Regional Water Quality Control Board San Diego Region meeting on Tuesday, September the 8th. Chris, can you please call? Oh, I'm sorry. Roger, do you have an opening statement and directions for us?
Yes, I do.
Good.
Good morning. My name is Roger Mitchell. I am a supervising engineering geologist with the San Diego Water Board. Today, I am serving as the remote meeting coordinator and would like to share some instructions on how to participate in today's virtual meeting. If you wish to make a verbal comment during the public forum or during one of the board agenda items, you must be signed into the Zoom webinar or be participating by phone. If you are currently watching the webcast on calspan.org and you want to comment on an agenda item, you will need to register to sign into the Zoom webinar or call into the meeting. Information on how to participate can be found on the San Diego Water Board meeting agenda website. Public comments will be accepted for each item after the items are complete. If you wish to speak on an item, please virtually raise your hand. If you are using a computer or tablet, please use the raise hand button in Zoom. If you're calling into Zoom, please dial *9 to raise your hand. Please use the raise hand feature to let the board know you wish to speak, even if you previously registered and indicated that you wish to speak on an item. If you do not raise your hand, we will assume you no longer wish to speak. When public comments start on an item, the commenter order will be determined by the order each person raised their hand. I will call on each commenter by name, or if you are on the phone, I will call the last three digits of your phone number, and then I will unmute each person when it is their turn to speak. Please note you will not appear by video during your testimony. There is a 3-minute time limit for each public commenter. However, at that time could be extended at the chair's discretion. During public testimony, you will see a timer on the screen for those calling in by phone. We will run the timer and let you know when you have 30 seconds left and when your time is up. I would like to remind everyone participating in the board meeting today to state your name for the record before you speak, and please remember to mute your microphone if you are not speaking. If you experience any technical difficulties, please call or text to area code 805-801-3676 or email it@agpvideo.com. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger. Chris, do you want to call the roll? Is that,
yes, sir.
Is that the right thing to do?
Yes. Mr. Anderson?
Here.
Miss Blair? I'm not sure if Ms. Blair is here. Ms. Cantu?
Here.
Dr. Olson?
Here.
Mr. Strawn?
Here.
Ms. Warren?
Here. Can you hear me, Chris?
Yeah, I can hear you. And Dr. Robert L.
Here. Thank you. Stephanie, we could see your mouth moving, but we couldn't hear you. okay. Let's move on to the public forum. So any member of the public may address the board. We welcome that. You will have 3 minutes, please, to speak on an item not on the agenda, because as we come to the agenda items, you will have ample time to address the board on those issues. Do we have any public speakers?
Yes, Chair Barbanel, we have two speakers. First, we have Barry Pulver.
Good morning.
Morning, Barry. Barry. How are you?
And it's a pleasure to see you guys, well, and speak with you again, Chairman of Barbanel and members of the board. First, just I'd like to say Laura Hunter sends her regrets. She had wanted to talk to you this morning, but unfortunately was not able to. And she asked me to take her place, which are pretty big shoes to fill. Well, I briefly want to talk to you about and thank you and your staff was a meeting that Laura and I had with your staff that was in response to her last time she provided some testimony to the board about the KB Homes Oak Creek development near Felicita Park in near Escondido. We had an exceptional meeting. We were kind of blown away how well it was attended with the AEO, branch chief, a senior, and three staff members to talk about our concerns and the community's concerns. Staff did a great job in explaining why Laura was not allowed to discuss certain items at her last board meeting, last time she spoke to you. And we were very pleased to hear about all the work that the Water Board has been doing regarding the issues that Laura had raised about the Oak Creek development, especially the communication they're having with the City of Escondido staff to make sure that there is a good coordination between both agencies to make sure that KB Homes is doing what they need to do to protect water quality. But was we found was greatly exceptional was a letter that was sent out by the Water Board to KB Homes, which clearly said they need to do what's right and acknowledge that KB Homes is not a newcomer. They know what needs to be done to protect water quality. They have to make sure they have effective stormwater pollution BMPs and manage it during the season. When Laura spoke to the community members about this, they were very pleased to hear that the Water Board is in fact an ally with them in protecting and restoring water quality in the area. So this rainy season, the expectation for everyone in the community is that KB Homes will be doing what they need to do to prevent further discharges. And there will be more inspections by the Water Board staff, the City of Escondido, and the community members will keep their eyes and ears open to help the Water Board and the City of Escondido do what they need to do to protect water quality. Again, just quickly, I want to thank all the staff members who took their time to meet with us and prepare that letter. It was greatly appreciated by the community. Thank you.
Matt Yeager.
Good morning, Dr. Yeager.
Good morning, Chair Barbanel, board members, Executive Officer Gibson, and regional board staff. Yes, Dr. Matt Yeager. I'm a senior flood control planner with the Riverside County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. And I am commenting today on behalf of the MS4 programs and co-permittees of the counties of Orange, Riverside, and San Diego, along with the City of San Diego. And the purpose of my comment is to advise the board that county representatives are available and standing by to address board member questions on item 9 on today's agenda. However, I am not commenting. This is not a comment regarding the merits of that agenda item. So to provide some context here, at the November 18th board meeting, representatives of our county MS4 programs made a presentation regarding the need for additional study of the applicability of those biological objectives to modify channels in the proposed basin plan amendment, which happened to be on the 18th agenda, which is the subject of item 9 on today's agenda. On the November 18th presentation, we also stated that the co-permittees were willing
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Dr. Yeager is speaking regarding, in my estimation, is speaking regarding the item that's on your agenda later this morning. And he submitted a letter
on behalf of co-permittees, which you have determined should not be included in the record, and it appears to me that he is speaking about that same topic at this time.
Right. That is correct, right? And if you have something to say that is not about item 9 or about anything that you want, there will be time at the when we hear item 9 for you to make this comment if you wish.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Actually, you will not, at this point, you had decided there would not be public comment during item 9. So I just wanted to clarify that. That would only be available for board member questions.
Okay, he may want to comment and ask questions to the board. But this public forum is to address things that are not on the agenda, Dr. Yeager.
Very well. We will be available for item number 9, and we appreciate this. Thank you very much.
No, I'm glad you're here, but this is not quite the right moment.
Very well.
Roger, is that it?
That is it.
Okay. Then we will move on to consideration of adoption of the board meeting minutes from the meeting of November 18th, 2020. Is there a motion to accept that?
So moved.
Can I ask a question about the minutes really quickly?
Let's get a second step and then we'll have discussion, okay?
Second.
Okay. Ready?
Sure. I don't have detailed notes, but did we actually capture all the people who commented on whatever agenda item it was last month when we talked about the base limits? It just seemed like the list wasn't as long as it felt like the number of people that actually spoke. And I just wanted to get a double check that, in fact, we had captured everyone.
I can't answer whether we captured everybody who was there. Maybe Roger knows or Chris, but we certainly heard from a lot of people.
We could. I would recommend that the board consider postponing adoption of the minutes so that we can verify and come back to it at the next meeting.
Sure. I don't mean to make a mountain out of a molehill. I just wanted to make sure for the record we had everyone.
No. Your point is very correct and generous. And we can certainly postpone voting on the minutes from last month. So the next time that we meet is in February 2021. So we'll vote on the minutes at that time. Okay. We have, this is the time to hear comments from board members. Our state board liaison couldn't make it, but Didi Diamo, I think, was supposed to be here representing the state board.
I am here.
Oh, welcome.
Good morning.
How are your daughter and grandchild doing?
Oh, my little grandson just turned 1 yesterday. So I remember when I was appearing before you, I think it was right before he was born. So the year has flown by. Good to see you all.
Well, I hope he has better years.
Well, so far he's safe and healthy, and that's a lot to wish for and a lot to receive. So,
right.
Are you ready?
Yes, please. Me?
Okay. Well, Laurel sends her regrets. Board member Firestone sends her regrets. And I will just be providing you with a quick update here. Last week, our board adopted the toxicity provisions, and this, in order to do this, we approved establishing the water quality control plan for inland surface waters, enclosed bays, and estuaries to include new statewide numeric water quality objectives for chronic and acute toxicity. This was a very complex exercise, believe it or not. It took almost 18 years to get there. We had many, many rounds of many drafts, an intense stakeholder process and board workshops, staff workshops. It was very technical, specifically related to some of the test methods to determine toxicity. So I'm really pleased to say that we finally got it across the finish line. And many of you participated in the Water Quality Coordinating Council meeting that we had in October. And one of the items that we discussed at great length was the Racial Equity Initiative. And so I'm going to just quickly go through some of the work that's being done there. I know many of you are extremely engaged, but this is a top priority for our board. The plan here is to really hear from staff, regional boards, stakeholders, and get a better sense of what can be done for us to work internally and externally on engagement, improved engagement that values listening and collaboration to drive action toward racial equity. The goal, the work product for this is to vet and finalize a proposed resolution on racial equity that would be considered for adoption by our board and as appropriately modified as a model for resolutions that would be considered for adoption by each of the regional boards. And as part of that resolution, of course, directing us to develop racial equity strategies and action plans to drive our efforts toward the coming years. And we have two key committees that are working on this initiative. We have a steering committee and then a work group. And we do have participation in the work group from Region 9. I apologize if I'm mispronouncing the last name, but Nicole Gergens from Region 9. And the work group is really hunkering down, working toward these initiatives and in conjunction with the steering committee. And the we just completed several public workshops. And so these groups are busy at work, and we look forward to the coming year and taking action on this. We had a staff released a preliminary draft construction stormwater general permit, and it is available on the construction stormwater program page. Our staff will be holding two workshops, one on December 9th and one on December 14th. And the purpose of these workshops is to provide stakeholders and interested parties information regarding the preliminary draft general permit and to allow stakeholders and interested parties to provide feedback. And our staff's been busy around this same time. They released a draft statewide general order for winery process water. That draft was released on December 2nd and slated for adoption for our board adoption in January of next year. I'm just looking for getting organized here. The other thing I wanted to update you on is that we continue to seek information from water suppliers on the COVID-related impacts on water supply systems and finance and operations in order to better prioritize our state response and information to support requests for federal assistance. And we initially requested information through a voluntary survey. We were able to receive a 10% response, which we felt was not significant enough, even though the 10% covers about 30% of the water users in these systems or through the state. But then we worked with AQUA and CMUA on doing some additional outreach to the water systems. And then our staff is also spending time directly calling many of the water systems, seeking this information in order to get a better sampling. And so the latest round for the survey, those responses are due were due at the end of November. Staff is busy analyzing that information, and we expect that they'll get a better sense by mid-December, and then we will be receiving a report on this information at our upcoming meeting on January 5th. And that's all I have for you. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Are there questions of Dee Dee? I have a question, Dee Dee. In your consideration of the construction general permit, will you, on behalf of Region 9, at least consider putting in modern monitoring techniques? We have some experience with that, which I will let Dave Gibson tell you, but I think it's time that we put it forward at the level that we think is feasible at this time. Dave, did you want to say a few words about that?
Only that we have shared previously with state board staff that there's an opportunity for larger, more complex construction sites to take advantage of readily available technology, which is now being used for site security, like CCTV cameras, and perhaps arrange for drone flyovers on request or for at a certain frequency for large sites. So we have asked the Division of Water Quality to consider adding language that allows the water boards to invoke that or makes it mandatory as part of the stormwater pollution prevention plan for large construction sites, say something perhaps 10 acres or larger, or where mass grading occurs across a rainy season. So we have shared this, and it does seem to be a technology which allows the water boards to more frequently visit sites without having to go out there on a weekend or after hours. And when we look at things like our stockpiles covered when they're not being used on weekends, for example, when it often rains, that is really the best way to find that answer out, especially since we are limited in being able to send staff out in the field right now due to COVID-19 restrictions, and also because of we don't have the money to pay overtime for weekend work, for example. So this is a technology that would be very useful in the construction stormwater field, as we saw with our San Altos compliance case a few years ago.
Really interesting. Thank you. Fortuitous that I happen to be here today with the rollout of this recently happening. So I'll check with staff. I'll also mention it to Board Member Firestone. This is an area that I'm really interested in, looking into ways that we can, from a staff perspective, do more with less. And so you've piqued my interest. Of course, I always look at economic impact as well, but this is something that I'd be interested in talking with all stakeholders about, getting their perspectives. So thank you so much for
So there's an economic impact that Dave didn't mention. The staff wears hard hats when they go out on these site visits, but CCTV cameras don't. So we'll save on the hard hats. Okay. Any questions more of Dee Dee? Thank you very much for filling in for Laurel.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, and happy holidays to all of you. And I will close off my screen, but stay tuned for a little bit here to follow your activities. Thank you.
Okay. Bye. So are there any comments, informational or otherwise, from board members? Oh, okay. Celeste, I couldn't see your other hand as it went up.
Right, it wasn't on camera.
Right.
Just a couple of things. Thank you, Dee Dee. Dee Dee talked about the equity listening sessions, which I think are one of the first major steps that the state and regional boards are doing to get input on where people feel we are and where we need to be concerning equity issues. It looks like this next year, all of 2021, is going to be, there'll be a certain cadence as we proceed and articulate what our embracing equity issues will mean. And different regional boards are doing different things. LA is starting by having a retreat to really get into touch with their board members as to where their community is and where their gaps are regarding a sense of belonging and equity and how people feel in terms of being invited to the table and whether or not their words are being heard when they do come to the table. And I'm hoping that Region 9 can start an arc also for the next 12 or 14 months to help us in our own journey in getting into touch with what we need to do to make our process more equitable, more inclusive, and more diverse. And I don't know exactly what that looks like, but I think it's something we need to give some thought to.
Thank you. Other board member comments? Okay, hearing none. Dave, are you ready for the executive officer's report?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the board. I'd like to ask if, first of all, there are any questions on the written report.
Dave, I have two questions. And they both addressed what I think was one of the first items in your report, but let me get the number for you. So going, number two, the USEPA meetings on the USMCA agreement. There's a note in here about missing a deadline, essentially, that resulted in a $200,000 loss of funds to do a project, if I'm correctly sort of interpreting the report. Could you speak to that a little bit more? And does that have implications at all in the legal proceeding that's sort of, you know, following on a parallel path?
Thank you, Board Member Warren. Unfortunately, it was a missed opportunity. In order to try to facilitate a short-term diversion capacity at the IBWC plant of River Flows, which at the time during the last summer we were negotiating this, were up to about 15 million gallons per day. We had sought and had received approval from the State Water Resources Control Board Division of Financial Assistance that we could obtain $200,000 to help offset the construction costs of the berm and the highline pipelines and so on into the treatment plant. That money was waiting for us and standing by. We had agreement from the County of San Diego to receive the funds, and they would, in fact, have erected the berm. The shortcoming, unfortunately, was an inability to get the International Boundary and Water Commission to sign on to an MOU with EPA and the County of San Diego to actually affect that. In the interim, the flows were fortunately ceased at the end of August, beginning of September. And with the onset of the rainy season, it was decided that we would wait and see until what happened this winter before trying to resume the ability to build a short-term diversion capacity into the treatment plant. In addition, unfortunately, IBWC has an issue with their influent. They are receiving more than 10 million gallons per day of additional flows into the treatment plant, which actually consumed the capacity we were planning to send from the river diversion. So not only could we not get them to sign the MOU, there's no capacity in the plant right now to accept additional flows because they're taking in additional sewage from Tijuana. Perhaps those two things are related. It's not entirely clear. The money is still there. We can request it again. And I believe that the State Board has indicated they consider this to be a high enough priority that they would address this need if in the spring we find that we need to resume the ability to, on a short-term basis, divert flows into the treatment plant. And if in the interim, IBWC has fixed its technical problem and can take additional flows into the treatment plant. So yes, it's a missed opportunity. It's one we can recapture when we need to, I believe, in the spring after the rainy season. In the meantime, though, we continue to focus on the long-term permanent solution that needs to be constructed, which is a U.S. side diversion.
Okay, thank you. And then I have just, if you don't mind, I have a follow-up question on that same item. Further down in the report, it talks about other options for the use of the pipeline and capacity at Point Loma may be considered as one of the more long-term USMCA project alternatives. Could you just speak to that a little bit more, please?
Yes, we also looked for short-term ability to divert flows from the river to another location. One of the other options that was considered was the existing pipeline from the International Boundary and Water Commission property to the Point Loma sewage treatment plant. It goes through a couple of pump stations, and one of the options would have been to resurrect that line. It hasn't been used in almost 20 years. That approach was set aside as a short-term option because we would need to investigate whether the pipeline is intact through its entire course, whether it's in fact serviceable. And the city of San Diego indicated they have some capacity issues between pump station one and pump station two, particularly in the rainy weather. We wouldn't want to have sanitary sewer overflows in the downtown area because of this. So it was no longer available as a short-term option. It is still being considered as a long-term option. And indeed, our permit with Point Loma already covers this. It allows for that additional flow and treatment at Point Loma of sewage from Tijuana. So we were still looking at that, but as a short-term option, we also took that one off the table for now.
So though, as part of the long-term option, would those diverted flows then be part of the Pure Water program?
They would not. They would be entering the Point Loma treatment plant downstream of the diversion for Pure Water.
So they would ultimately be discharged to the Pacific Ocean?
Yes, as was indeed the case through much of the 1990s when that pipeline was in service. It was about 13 million gallons per day.
I don't mean to take us down too much of a wormhole, but I guess perhaps as a future, I don't have a sense, Dave, for how realistic this is an approach or how much time the Water Board should spend on this. Assuming that it's not something that's really going to happen, then you can disregard what I'm about to say. But I was just, it caught my attention because I was a little bit confused about ongoing outfall or output, if you will, from the Point Loma wastewater treatment facility when the idea was that it would be used to capture and reuse to create a potable source of water, because the plant is not going to be upgraded and would continue to require waivers. So again, if this is not really something the board needs to spend time on, then you can disregard these comments, but it certainly caught my eye when I was reading the report.
Yeah, thank you, Board Member Warren. It is ball very much in the air right now. There are a number of options that EPA is considering with the USMCA funding. Among the ones that they reported was also looking at purchasing the South Bay Water Reclamation Facility and using it or expanding its capacity to treat that same volume of sewage and then treat it to secondary and discharge it through the South Bay Ocean outfall. So they're looking at a number of options right now. But in the long term, the city of San Diego may find that they actually value that water as an additional dilutant as they divert more and more flows from Point Loma to the Pure Water Project. So the city of San Diego is considering that option as well as US EPA, and there are other options which are competing with it right now. And so there are several balls up in the air at this moment. If and when they do decide to resurrect that Point Loma pipeline and it is serviceable, the board would have the opportunity to reconsider whether or not to allow that or to condition it with the next permit reissuance. And as for the secondary treatment capacity at Point Loma, they're awfully close to it right now. With the technology that they have in place for advanced primary, they are very, very close to achieving secondary at that facility and may very well do so with the increased diversion of flows to the Pure Water Project, which, of course, treats it to potable. And so there's several options in our future in terms of how Point Loma may or may not be used with regard to sewage from Tijuana.
Okay, I guess my request then would be that before anyone gets too far down the road, I think it would be helpful to bring the board members, however the board is constituted at that point, up to speed on sort of like the big picture impact, looking at both South Bay and Point Loma, so that we have like a holistic view of all of the options, so that I guess before anyone gets too wedded to anything, the permitting body is, you know, made aware of all the balls in the air and see how they play together. That would just be my long-term concern, just to save money, right? Like, I don't think we want to get, it would be so, if we know about it and we waited to say no, it just seems to me to be bad form on the part of the water boards, even if this is 10, 20, 30 year conversation.
Yeah, we requested that EPA meet with us frequently, and I have met with them on an almost weekly basis over the last several months. And Vice Chair Cantu is on the Eligible Public Entities Consulting Group, what used to be called the IACG. And as they come closer to making decisions as to what types of infrastructure EPA wants to invest in, we will have an opportunity to bring that information to the board, either in an informational item or in an action item, depending on the nature of the question for your consideration. And I anticipate certainly at least a couple of executive officers' reports between now and probably March or April when the decisions are expected to be made.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any other questions on the written report? I have a couple of things to add. First of all, following on to that very same subject, I was happy to coordinate a joint letter with Mayors Faulkner, Salas, and Didina, and Supervisor Cox, Port President Malcolm, to the US EPA on the current status of the USMCA funds. We received a presentation on November 18th that was repeated for the public on the 19th, or rather the 19th and the 20th. Vice Chair Cantu was present with that. There were a number of studies that looked at onshore flows on the coast from San Antonio de los Buenos, where wastewater partially treated or untreated is discharged into the ocean. And we expressed the board's concern, as indicated in the resolution adopted almost a year ago, R9-2020-0246, on a U.S. side solution and not to give short shrift to the Tijuana River Valley in the interest of expediting an expedient project to replace that sewering capacity. Nonetheless, there is value, as we mentioned just a few moments ago, at providing additional sewage capacity at the South Bay Water Reclamation Plant or even expanding the IBWC's South Bay International Wastewater Treatment Plant. So we don't want to take those options off the table, but we did want to reiterate that the impetus of the Act in Congress was to protect the Tijuana River Valley, its natural ecosystems, the communities of San Ysidro, and the inland portion of Imperial Beach, not just beach water quality at the beach. And so we did express those concerns. And we also were concerned that there was an announcement made that Administrator Wheeler would be making an early decision before the technical report was completed as to what projects would be preferred and acted upon. We have invested a great deal in the technical approach over the last some months, and we did not want the administration to give short shrift to that process before the report's even completed, of simply making an announcement of what decisions and what projects would go forward. If they happen to be our priorities, that would be very nice, but they could easily not be. And so we expressed concern that the technical analysis approach be completed and that EPA maintain the regular interaction with the state, federal, and local agencies. I understand that Secretaries Blumenfeld and Wade Crowfoot of the Natural Resources Agency met to discuss our letter and may be sending a letter of their own in support of our position to US EPA. So that letter went out on Monday. Also this week, I will be meeting with Port Commissioner Malcolm and members of the stakeholder groups in the San Diego Bay to discuss copper implementation issues at Shelter Island and throughout the bay. And then finally, I believe you probably already know this, but with the governor's order, our office is now among those that are officially closed. We will be closed for 3 weeks. We will have staff enter the office only periodically to collect mail, et cetera, and deposit checks. But for the next 3 weeks, all of our staff are working. They're working at home. And we will have a vigilance where we can on construction sites and other facilities. Fortunately or unfortunately, it appears that the month ahead, we're going to have virtually no rain. On the other hand, we'll have fire weather. So we will hopefully not have to visit many construction sites, but we may very well find that our staff need to respond to those issues, and we're prepared to do so as safely as we can. But we're prioritizing only emergency and very high priority sites for inspections over the next 3 weeks. If there are no other questions, that concludes my report for this month.
I have a presentation to make, Dave, which we were going to make at this time.
Okay.
Yes,
we do.
Is Mr. Means on the call somewhere?
We were expecting him. Chris, is he, Chris or Roger, is he on the attendees list?
Yes, he is. I'm promoting him to panelists now.
Excellent.
I'm here, Dave.
Okay, good morning, Christopher.
Good morning.
The Regional Water Board is pleased to present you the Sustained Superior Accomplishment Award. And that is for your work on both the very complex enforcement settlement with the City of San Diego and working with the prosecution team to address the 6 million gallon sewage spill from September 2017 to October 2020. Chris demonstrated his superior performance through his hard work, deep diving into the research of the technical aspects of the case, and his tact and diplomacy in his engagement with city staff. Chris navigated many diverse issues in the case and seized every opportunity to educate city staff and suggest appropriate corrective actions. On the basis of that settlement and Chris Means' work, the Water Board was able, with confidence of the $2.5 million settlement order, to help implement an important SEP, Special Environmental Project Program. I forgot what SEP stands for, but something close to that, for the Conceptual Wetlands Rewild Project in Mission Bay. So Chris, on behalf of the board, but unfortunately not in person, we are very pleased to present you to this award. Now, we always give the awardee an opportunity to say a few words, and if you would like to do so, this is your chance.
Well, thank you, Chairman, and members of the board. I truly appreciate this recognition, and it was a tough case, but it was also a team effort. So I'd like to thank all the members of the prosecution team and state board staff who assisted, my fabulous OE attorneys, Mayumi Yakamoto and Catherine Ha, the members of the prosecution team, Jimmy Smith, Kelly Dorsey, Jeremy Haas, Jill Harris, and I want to give a lot of thanks to my wonderful supervisor, Chiara Clemente, who, in the midst of this whole mess, I had some serious medical problems, and she supported me and backed me up the entire time. So, again, thanks to everybody on the team that helped out, and it was a team effort, and if we ever get out of this pandemic, all the members of the prosecution team can know that the drinks are on me. Thank you.
And okay, we'll look forward to that.
Good, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to add my thanks as well. Chris is quite right. This could easily have been a team award, but his role in the prosecution team in this case was particularly outstanding. Chris and I joined the Water Board only a few months apart in 2000. And in this issue, he had to re-educate the city staff several times over from scratch as the entire city staff team changed on this in the course of a complicated negotiation on an enforcement action. That he was able to do that, I think, really facilitated the ability of the board to take action on this last October, as you did. And that was a very personal effort on his part that I think is much appreciated by the advisory team and should be very much appreciated by the city of San Diego. So thank you very much, Chris, for a job very well done.
Thank you.
So Dave, I think it's actually appreciated by the region as a whole. The SEP was, I thought, broad and remarkable and couldn't have happened without the settlement.
Absolutely correct.
Couldn't have happened without the spill too, but unfortunately we don't have a no spill SEP policy yet. Okay, I'm going to move on to agenda item number 3. This is an opportunity for board members to identify future agenda items that they would like to hear. Celeste, oh, there's your hand. Okay.
Yeah, I think Stephanie raised a really good point. I think the time is now, the issue is mature enough that we should have a formal agendized discussion on where we are on the Tijuana pollutant flows, maybe on our February, hopefully on our February agenda. So we can just plot out all the options and where we stand on all of them and carve out some time to really understand that.
Okay, and we know that's a big item. Maybe we'll have some other contributions of items to discuss at the same time. That will be our retreat.
Yeah, I guess, I just don't want to catch anyone by surprise. I think it would not be doing ourselves, not be in the best interest of the board, sort of like the entity of the board to do that. And that's why I think it's critical, even if we have to spread it out through the spring, like if, you know, however makes sense, Dave. I don't know that it needs to be in one broad presentation, but that we're continuing to hear from you all on this.
Yeah, I think it would be very useful and appropriate. I will ask only for some flexibility in timing it so that if we decide to make it an action item, we can do it in one meeting. We may be able to have an informational discussion item in February, but may not be able to take action given that we would have to have agenda packages out by the end of December. And we may not have any answers from EPA by that time. Nonetheless, I think it would be very useful to consider a resolution similar to the one I mentioned that you adopted in December, both as direction to staff and as indication to stakeholders and EPA what the board can and will do in terms of its regulatory authority over permitting decisions, not prejudging them per se, but indicating its preference and priority and the desired outcomes. I believe we can accomplish that much with careful attention from our attorneys to make sure we don't go too far in prejudging either pending or not yet pending items.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Dave, and Steph and Celeste. I would like to move on to the consent calendar. I hope this will be a short item because we have a long one following it. Are there any items on the consent calendar that a board member or a member of the public wishes to remove from the consent calendar for further consideration? Okay.
I do not see any hands raised at this time.
Thank you, Roger. If we could have a motion, and we can do items 4 through 8 with one motion. Is that correct, Catherine? Oh, I'm sorry, Betty.
I was just going to make the motion, but go ahead.
Okay.
Okay. Yes, you can make the motion for one vote, but I believe there's an errata for one of the items, and Vincent knows which one, so maybe he can chime in.
Hey, good morning, Chair and board members. Yes, there's an errata for item number 8, the non-regulatory updates to the basin plan. And so I would recommend that your motion on the consent calendar include the errata. Thank you.
Is that okay, Betty?
Yes.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Gary. Chris?
Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Ms. Cantrell?
Aye.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
Ms. Strawn? Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
Ms. Warren?
We think you're trying to say aye.
Dr. Barbanel.
Aye. Thank you. Okay. Since the next item is a large one, and we've been at this almost an hour, not quite, I would like to call a short break of 10 minutes. We will start again at 10 o'clock sharp. That's 11 minutes. So anybody who needs the extra minute now has them. Thank you. See you in 10 minutes. So Celeste, you can see that I had a very short appointment as Dave Gibson.
Yeah. How'd you manage that? That's pretty amazing.
I have no idea, and I just gone through about 10 minutes of
can hear you, but we can't see you, Henry, just so you know.
I know that.
I can take that up, Mr. Chairman, if you would like.
Could I interrupt for just a second? Mr. Chairman, sure. We are showing that you are trying to send us video, but we are not seeing you. Do you have your camera covered?
Nope.
Okay. Hold on one moment. We're going to stop your video and try to restart your video there. Yeah, no, for some reason, your video is not allowing us to restart you. Oh, okay. We'll continue then without video. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm gonna I'm gonna click our start video. I don't know.
Yeah, we're also hearing an echo.
So am I.
And do we have two Dave Gibsons online here? What is going on there?
Oh, one is Henry, maybe.
Oh, yeah, it's. Henry, could you speak again for us, please?
Just a second.
Okay, I'm seeing you logged in as two things, like you have logged into David Gibson's connection here.
That's true.
I need you to log out.
Maybe we can just take a short break.
Yes, we're going to take a short technical break here. Please stand by, everyone.
Number 9 plan, basic plan amendment.
Hold on one moment, please. We are need to restart the meeting here. Our recording process is here, please. Okay. All right. Looks like we're back together here. Thank you so much for your patience.
Thank you. Executive Officer Gibson, will you please give us a review?
Sure. I apologize. Early this morning, I sent my link to Henry thinking that he would be able to register. I sent him the wrong email. I sent him my personal link. Hence the multiplication of Dave Gibson's. It was unfortunately my fault. Mr. Chairman and members of the board, as you recall, the hearing on item number 9, the Basin Plan Amendment to add biological objectives, was closed on November 18th. And today you will resume deliberations that you started at the last meeting. Staff, including Chad Laughlin, Jeremy Haas, and I, and others are available to answer your questions. But in that event, you will wish to selectively reopen the hearing in order to receive that additional information. My recommendation to you today as your executive officer is to adopt Resolution R9-2020-0234 and add the biological objectives to the Basin Plan of the San Diego region as proposed by staff. In making this recommendation, I would like to emphasize that the implementation through our regulatory tools, like the regional MS4 permit, is an outcomes-based approach that will require, indeed necessitate, outreach and engagement with many agencies and organizations throughout the region over the course of many years to begin to restore or rehabilitate stream segments that currently do not support the warm or cold beneficial uses as measured by the CSCI, the California Stream Condition Index. Mr. Chad Laughlin and I are available to answer your questions. As I mentioned, you'll need to reopen the hearing to do that. And then during the deliberation, Board Member Olson identified a concern that an update be provided to the board annually on the issue of compliance with the new objective. To that end, we have drafted a brief addition to the tentative resolution, a new directive number 7, which I'm prepared to read into the record if it pleases the board now or later in the course of the proceedings today.
Let's open the public hearing again at, it's now 10:14 on December the 8th, and our public hearing is open. And I see that our chair is making progress. Congratulations. But with the hearing open, let's go ahead, Dave, with resolution amendment.
So we would propose that you consider adding an additional directive, number 7, which on page 11, which would direct the executive officer to solicit and provide to the board on an annual basis a report on the status of implementation of the stream biological objective. I can show that to you on screen if I can share my screen. I don't see that option on my screen. Oh, there it is. And are you seeing that now?
Yes.
So in response to Board Olson's questions at the last board meeting on November 18th, where this was indicated and where there was some discussion by the board, we would suggest adding this additional language today for your consideration to provide for that opportunity on an annual basis to hear from the stormwater co-permittees, other dischargers, NGOs, and so on, issues concerned with the implementation phase, both successes and the shortcomings or things that we need to address in the course of implementation.
Thank you. Are we going to hear any additional reports from our staff, from Mr. Laughlin or anybody else?
Mr. Laughlin is available and prepared to provide a short summation again, as he did at the last meeting, if necessary, to refresh you in order to enable you to continue your deliberations.
What are the wishes of the board? Do you have questions for Mr. Laughlin, who is with us?
I guess my question would maybe be more for Catherine. If Chad provides a summation of just previous testimony or evidence that was submitted, is that considered reopening for a public hearing, or is he allowed or someone allowed just to provide a summary?
I think that I believe Vice Chair Cantu reopened the hearing, and you can hear from him sort of a summation, and if he adds a little bit to it, I think he did his closing in about 6 minutes last time. So if the board wants to hear a sort of a refreshing of that closing, you can do so now with the public hearing open. And by the way, reopening the public hearing for limited purposes does not require that you reopen the floor for public comment on topics.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Laughlin, would you like to do a summary overview?
I am more than happy to, if it's the wish of the board.
Please proceed.
Okay, will do. Can you hear me okay? All right, so I'm Chad Laughlin. I am a senior environmental scientist in the Monitoring Assessment and Research Unit, for the record. And so I can just provide some brief kind of closing remarks, summing up last board meeting hearing. And really, the gist of this project is that really the proposed project you have today before you is really grounded in science, some of the best science in the country. And we're really ready to put that science to use. So while California is considered a leader in environmental protection in many areas, we do lag behind many other states, such as our neighbors Oregon and Arizona, on the use of biological objectives. What you heard in November from most of the commenters were concerns regarding implementation of the proposed biological objective, which is not uncommon for basin plan amendments simply because permitting actions are separate from the basin plan as required by the regulations. So we feel that we've provided the maximum level of specificity for implementation that is appropriate for inclusion in the basin plan, while also retaining the discretion of you, the board, for permit-specific implementation. If you recall, in November, I highlighted that this project was entirely consistent with and actually a direct result of the Practical Vision's goals, specifically using the latest science, prioritizing actions, and focusing on environmental outcomes. I feel it's also prudent to specifically call out the Practical Vision's core values of communication and transparency. As Dave called out a little bit here, I want to make it clear as well. We will be implementing the proposed objective with stakeholders in a process that is clear and transparent, consistent with the practical vision. We also heard from the board an interest in getting more frequent updates on stream condition and the implementation of the proposed biological objective. And Dave has provided some language for you to potentially to consider for inclusion in the resolution as a directive. We're very happy to do so. We think it's a great idea. And we suggest providing an annual informational item update to the board, as Dave has described, but also something more akin to the San Diego Bay updates that occur every year. Not only a status of the implementation of the objective, but just an overall status of water quality related to the objective throughout the region. So in closing, you have before you today a water quality objective that will both protect and restore beneficial uses because the objective itself is a measurable environmental outcome. It will also show the public true use attainment and protection in a meaningful and transparent way. So in closing, we recommend adoption of resolution R9-2020-0234 with the addendum that Dave has presented.
Thank you, Mr. Laughlin. At this time, I'll open it up for board members for any questions for our staff, Mr. Laughlin, or our executive officer or attorney. Dr. Olson.
Thank you. I just wanted to express my thanks to the staff and the executive director for spending quite a bit of time with me going over this item. And I'll withhold the rest of my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments for our staff? I have an observation. I think this is a long time coming. It is very well thought out. I'm very proud of the work that our staff has done, but change is always hard. And we've asked our stormwater authorities and the counties to make tremendous investments, and they have done so under an old regime. And a change to a new regime is going to be difficult. I have faith that with time, they'll find it to be to their advantage. What I would like to suggest is perhaps a series of virtual workshops that our staff conducts, inviting our permittees and co-permittees so that they can better come to terms with what this change means for them and possibly see the advantage of it to them, even though it is a change of protocol. And I hope that's something that our staff is able to do that would will serve our permittees well. If there's no other comments, I'll entertain a motion to adopt the proposed resolution with the amendment as detailed.
I would like to make that motion, please.
Mr. Strawn, is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Ms. Warren. Any further discussion?
I think that one of the important points was made that this is sort of the regulatory piece and that decisions can still be made on a permit by permit basis. I think that is critical for me in thinking through how this will ultimately be implemented and a good reminder.
Thank you.
If I can add some comments here, Celeste, I guess this is the right time, and I need to take a couple of minutes. Most of you know I've been a supporter of this biological assessment and monitoring since before I was on the board 10 years ago. I believe it's important not just because it's cost effective as well as being an advancement in science. And I want to start off basically go back and thank Rafi and Pete Odie and Eric Stein and our own executive officer, Dave Gibson and Chad, for their leadership in this. And they really have led the whole state through this process. And I think it's a long time coming, but it's good. And I agree with Stephanie that now implementing needs to be in a specific and a measured form. But I want to relate a short story here about why I think this is so effective. There's a stream in East County, some of you heard about it. Routinely tested 10 times above the average for nitrates. And there's been at least, 6 years worth of intensive investigation to try to find the source of the nitrates. To my knowledge, it's come up fruitless. But just a short distance below where that measurement is taken, which happens to come out of a hardened area of the stream, bioassessments have routinely showed that the health of the stream is relatively good compared to the rest of the watershed. And that's important to me because although we still want to know where those nitrates came from, the fact that the stream itself is doing well tells us two things. It tells us that restoring a section, in this case, just below that hardened stream, makes a big difference. It filters out the trash, and there actually was an absorption study done by San Diego State grad students to show how quickly that nitrate is absorbed by that restored habitat. And so, like I say, we still want to know where it comes from, but in my mind, it changes the priority. It allows us to focus some of the expensive effort that was going into trying to find that source and say, you know, sooner or later, we're going to figure that out and go at it. It's probably a heritage kind of situation. But the bioassessment lets us focus on the end result. How healthy is the stream rather than chasing our tails, looking at one particular item that showed up in the chemistry testing. And my second point is that I've used this for a long time in educating students, second graders up through high school and AP biology students. And I'm amazed at the results of how the student's attention level increases from when we're just doing the chemistry test to when they're counting the bugs and looking at the diversity of the biology in the stream. And my point is that one of our tasks is to increase public awareness and their involvement in helping us improve the health of the streams. And my experience is that once we talk in terms of the biology, what's living in the stream, what's dying in the stream, how diverse is it, the public interest comes alive. And I think that this not only will give us a tool to prioritize the areas that we go after with more detailed chemical testing, but it will also help us to enlist the public, and we talked about open and clear communications. This is a tool that people understand. When you start talking to them about all the little critters in the bottom of the stream dying, you get their attention. And when we talk about diversity, it's a great lesson not only for students but adults also. So I support this for several reasons. I just wanted to state those because that's just my subjective look at this. And although I understand that the co-permittees' concerns about how we implement this related to modified streams, the bottom line is we need to move forward with this and we need to do the implementation carefully. But it's time to move forward with using biological indicators. And that's why I move that we approve this motion.
Thank you, Mr. Strong. Thank you. Any other comments or questions from the board? Dr. Olson?
You're muted, Biddy.
I thank you, Henry. What I wanted to say was, I understand the concern about channelized soft bottoms that was expressed. And one of the reasons why I wanted to have these reports made back to the board was if problems were encountered, that the board could make adjustments to move the process forward, and also hear the concerns or the difficulties that were experienced by the permittees. And I do believe that a number of items that were raised by the permittees were structural in nature. And I went over all the changes requested with the executive officer, Dave Gibson, and with Chad Laughlin and Jeremy Haas. So I think for me, when I served on the Science Advisory Board, I came away with the idea of a practical vision. But I had never really seen one until I read it during the process of being appointed to the board. And I want to compliment the board on that. I want to compliment the staff on it. And I hope that it's successful and gets the outcomes we do desire. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Olson. I see our chair is back online, and I'll pass the imaginary gavel back to you, Chair Abarbanel.
Thank you. Just to make a point, my appearing as Dave Gibson was a message to Dee Dee that we need two of them. So send us another one. Thank you very much. And thank you, Celeste, for taking over. I think we fixed it, but I don't know how. So do we have other board comments on this resolution? Is there a motion to on this resolution?
We have a motion and a second, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Then what we need is for Chris to call the roll.
Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Ms. Cantu?
Aye.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye, verily.
Ms. Warren?
Aye.
Dr. Barbanel?
Aye. Okay, I believe that we have one more item on the agenda. That item number 10 was postponed to a later board meeting, and that we will hear from Eric Becker on the update of a new wetland policy. And I don't believe there are any closed sessions today. Just a second, Eric. Is that correct?
That's correct. There are no closed sessions today.
Okay, so this is the last item. And thank you all. Eric, please, sorry for interrupting you.
Oh, not a problem here. I'll share my screen. I have a few slides. Can you see that okay?
Yes.
Okay. Good morning, Chairman, members of the board. My name is Eric Becker. I'm a senior engineer with your Wetlands and Riparian Protection Unit. Item number 10 is an update on the new wetland policy or policies. It's an informational item only, so no action is required. We also have Paul Hahn, who's the chief of watersheds and wetland section at the state board, to provide the statewide perspective. So it's been a year since we gave you a program update. In that interim, we've had significant changes both on the state and federal level. We'll start with the state. The wetland definition of procedures for discharges of dredged and, or fill material to waters of the state that are known as dredge and fill procedures became effective this year. And we also had an effective, the new US EPA Clean Water Act Section 401 certification rule became effective here in September. So I'll start with the dredge and fill procedures. It became effective in essentially June of this year, and it applies to most of our projects that want to dredge or do dredge or fill activities within waters of the state. If you recall from our update last year, there's just a few highlights that the dredge and fill procedures apply. It establishes wetland waters of the state definition. It comes up with delineation procedures for those wetlands and waters of the state, and a detailed application and review process spelled out. In addition, it adds important tools for the program, including a requirement for more complex projects for an alternatives analysis, which is used to figure out what is the least environmentally damaging project alternative for a project, including evaluating offsite options. Also provides some additional detail on coming up with what is the appropriate mitigation that's been useful. Now this we got about 6 months into the effective date, and it is requiring additional work or staff, but it's been invaluable. Having a set criteria that staff can go to and be supported by during this process has been invaluable. In addition, it helps applicants. I mean, they know exactly what they need to submit as part of their application, and it's there in black and white. So it should result in, and I think it is resulting in, better applications that we're getting in through the office. And lastly, I just wanted to acknowledge just all the hard work that State Board staff has done in providing training, guidance, and support after the implementation of the procedures. We were lucky to have a in-person training here down in San Diego right before the everything kind of shut down there in March. So it's been helpful. Now moving on to the not so helpful part is the new Clean Water Act section and rule. It is actually doing the opposite of helping. It really is limiting our ability to regulate federal waters or waters of the U.S. So I'll go through a couple of changes that we're dealing with. First and foremost, it's the reasonable time period, which essentially is when we get an application, how soon do we have to act on that, either certify it or deny it. Under the old requirements, it was up to a year. Now the new one is effectively 90 days. So we get an application, we have to do something with that within that 90 days, which is pretty quick. There's also a requirement has changed for pre-application meetings. Before, they were voluntary. We could have as many as we want. Didn't start the process, and they were helpful in discussing details of the project before we get an application. Now there's a mandatory request. We don't have to grant a pre-application meeting, but the applicant has to ask for one, and it starts this process, including 30 days after that request, they can apply, and then 90 days after that, then we have to certify or deny. Also, changes in what constitute a complete application. There was a lot more detailed requirements in the end of the previous rules, and they've made them a lot more general. There's like 9 general things of what constitute a complete application. Especially if we're having to deal with these quick of time frames, we want as much detail as possible. Other parts that have changed is that we no longer can amend a certification once we send it over to the Corps to be included as part of the 404 certification, 404 permit. And lastly, enforceability. We never had issues enforcing both state and federal requirements in our old certifications, but now the new rule goes to limit our authority.
Eric, would you prefer we ask questions based on the slides or hold questions till the end?
It's up to you. We can stop and ask if you have questions.
Do you mind going back one slide just real quick before we move too far? To your point on the change in timeline from, you know, now the staff needs to act within 90 days, what drawbacks, if any, are there of just quick denials of, hey, you guys, you know, here's our, we've got 90 days to review this. It's not there. You know what you need. I mean, because correct me if I'm wrong, but this is an issue we've visited time and time again in terms of getting quality applications to you so that the staff, when it does have to dig in, is able to, you know, make a good decision rather than sort of having you drag on for years.
It's a great question. And actually, I have some options slide here in about 2 more after this, if you want me to address it then.
It's okay then, you can hold.
Okay.
But Eric,
yes.
May I ask you whether these new rules apply to all 50 states, and of course the District of Columbia, or just California?
No, it's a federal change. It applies to the entire country.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. So what are these changes and what are the challenges? Well, first and foremost, accelerated timelines. I mean, it's difficult to, especially on a complex project, to get all the information, make determinations if it's appropriate mitigation, and issue something within that 90 days. Second is the more meetings. We actually appreciate having a pre-application meeting is great. Unfortunately, we've been inundated by requests because it is the start of the process. So before we could manage them a little more effectively, and now we're getting inundated. So it impacts our workload. Water quality justification. Now it's whatever we put in our water quality certifications, we have to justify and tie it back to a water quality requirement. So that makes it more difficult for us. And then they could challenge it if we don't tie all our requirements back to water quality standards. Lack of process clarity. I mean, we've gotten clarity as far as what is the reasonable time period, but we're really all how this is all going to work and how the pieces are going to be together, we still don't know. Fortunately, we're going to meet with the Army Corps of Engineers, the local office here, to hopefully discuss how this is all going to work. It's not only affects us, but other resource agencies. How is the Corps going to address all the agency's comments within that 90 days? And then another unintended consequence of the new rule is that the old applications that we have are not on the same statutory, accelerated timeline. So we're kind of jumping back and forth. And it could impact if we're chasing a timeline for the new applications, it might impact our ability to work on the older applications. Next thing is the challenges is on denial itself. We have to justify, do a better job or tie it directly to water quality requirements if we're going to go out and deny a project. And that we have to come up with that within that 90-day period. And last, enforceability challenge. We don't want another agency be responsible for enforcing our requirements. So we obviously disagree on this part. And we also issue 401 certifications as waste discharge requirements. So they're enforceable under state. So back to your question, deny. I mean, that's going to be a result of this. We're not going to be able to get to and get quality applications and go through all the details of the applications. And it's not really helpful for either us or the applicant. So if we can't get to, if they don't have a great application, everything dotted and T's crossed, I's dotted, we're going to have to deny. So that is an option. Delay application, and we're implementing this actually. We're trying it at least. We meet with the applicants during their pre-meeting, and then if it is not ready, we ask them to maybe not apply, then not start the clock, and continue to discuss the details of the project. I think this could be effective, at least as in an interim method. And for the most part, the people that have incomplete or not enough detail or don't have their mitigation set up have refrained from applying, but they're under no obligation. Once they request a pre-application meeting, they can submit an application within that 30 days. And the last thing, another thing is templates and standard 401s. We're going to have to work on this because if we're going to have to tie all our requirements to water quality, we're gonna need to work on our certifications. And I know the Water Board and State Board's kind of leading the charge on us developing some of these templates that include tying everything to water quality standards. Next thing we could do is request more reasonable time period. We've done this locally, and I know State Board has reached out and tried on a state level. We haven't had much success on this. They are going by essentially the 90 days for most permits and haven't moved off. Next option would be is to take more items to the board. I mean, if we waste discharge requirements, if we require that, it's going to add to the length of the application process, but we're not under the accelerated timeframes that the 401 certification would apply. And the last option is to request additional staff resources. Obviously, we're having difficulty, doing our previous workload. So this is going to add to that workload and make more stress, have more stress on staff to meet all these timelines. And so we could definitely use additional staff resources. I know we did some kind of estimates of that maybe we could, even under the old requirements, that we could use an additional whole unit doing 401 certifications here, even in San Diego. So add that on to the new requirements and we'd probably even need more resources.
Eric, sorry, is there a question? Is the request for more reasonable time period, is that to USEPA or the regional administrator for USEPA?
It's actually through the Army Corps of Engineers. The US EPA wrote the 401 certification rule, but it's responsible. The Army Corps of Engineers is responsible for implementing through the 404 program.
So potentially that's something that could change with the administration.
That is correct. Yes. So we don't know. Well, there's a lot of questions up in the air. And like I said, we'll get a little more clarity once we meet with the local core. I think they're struggling as much as we are as far as trying to figure out what to do.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, I'd like to offer just a couple of points of view as your executive officer, the one who acts on many of the 401 certifications on your behalf. First of all, I think that as we approach the item, we were originally contemplating talking about how to implement the state board's definition and policy and do so in a way that was really effective with the applicant and able to realize their projects in a useful period of time, maybe even realize some efficiencies we've long sought. We recognize that it has been frustrating for the applicants that projects have taken very long, and because projects take long, there are projects in line behind them. Unfortunately, though, the new rules really place the state of California in conflict with the in as much as, in my view, the new federal rules would shift the burden of proof from the applicant to prove that their project does not, has avoided, has minimized, and has appropriate mitigation and prevents water quality impacts to the water board to demonstrate that it is not. And if we cannot demonstrate that, then we are given very little time with which to analyze or to work with the applicants to address this. Also, these decisions are permanent in a way that not many other water board decisions are. Once a project is approved to dredge or fill wetlands, that's essentially it. Once they're dredged and filled, you can't simply turn the clock back or implement a new measure at a treatment facility like you can, say, a wastewater discharge. So there are some true dilemmas and conflicts inherent in this, so much so that I've characterized it internally as either a premature report to you or an overdue report to you. But we will be working with the state board on this, and I believe Paul Hahn from the state board is here with us today to perhaps offer some more information or clarification on my view on this. But I think that we are in for some troubled times ahead, particularly if the new regulations are not in some way stayed or withdrawn or revised in the new incoming administration. So I just wanted to share those points of view with you, and also to share also following on the most recent item that you just considered, as I will consider in the next year or so, with or without these regulations, elevating some of these decisions to you for your consideration, where they include biological objective or biological monitoring. So they'll have that opportunity for the boards to weigh in on those projects as they come forward. But being able to bring these projects to you are sharp strained by these new regulations that require essentially action within 90 days of receipt of the application. It's practically impossible to fast track them that way. But we will seize those opportunities where we can. So thank you for letting me interject a few viewpoints as we go on.
That's actually all I have. I was going to pass it over to Paul Hahn here, unless you have additional questions of me. Hearing none, I'll pass it over to Paul then.
I got to unmute. Thanks. hello, board members and board chair. Thank you for letting me talk with you today. I'm here to provide you an update on what's happening with the dredge and fill procedures, as well as providing you some state board perspective on some of the rule changes that are coming down the pipe. You'll forgive me, I don't have a slide deck here with me, and that will become apparent soon. I want to start off with the dredge or fill procedures. As Eric mentioned, those were adopted in 2019, became effective on May 28th. This year, we have really focused on doing the implementation and training necessary to get those, to facilitate the implementation of those procedures. Specifically, Eric mentioned that we had training in the San Diego area in February. We have the dubious distinction of being one of the last folks to be able to travel before the COVID travel restrictions came upon us, and that was largely because they didn't want to leave us stranded in San Diego, which would have been kind of nice, but better to come home. So we have also done some public training in early May. Our intention at the time was to go through and do kind of a roadshow throughout the state at many of the regional boards. we, due to the COVID travel restrictions, we were not able to do that. So instead, what we have done is we have put together a training webinar that is available on our website. And that was about a 3-hour training appropriate for the public, and it was basically built with the assumption that people wouldn't necessarily know much about wetland permitting in general, nor about the procedures. So it really kind of started from the basics and worked up from there. And again, that's available on our website if you're interested in looking at it. In addition to that, we prepared a non-regulatory implementation guidance document. This guidance document is intended to be a living document that we can update as necessary as we find things that need to be clarified about the procedures or provide additional guidance to the regulated community. It provides a topically organized information. Our procedures are largely focused on who's doing the work at which point in the process. And so sometimes it's difficult to be able to trace a single topic throughout the entire procedures. So for our guidance document, we focused on making it topically organized. It includes answers to frequently asked questions that we received, and it also includes references to where additional information can be found. In addition to that regulatory implementation guidance document, we also prepared some climate change guidance. If you may remember that our procedures did require an evaluation of permittee responsible mitigation to ensure that that permittee responsible mitigation was able to be stable within the context of climate change. And so we had some basic requirements for that. And we, as part of our guidance development, we developed non-binding guidance on how you might do that climate change review. Of course, other tools and techniques might be appropriate, but this is one that we thought was reasonably straightforward and was streamlined and was developed with a team of scientists both within and outside of the water boards. In addition to that, we've included some additional assistance on our website about when an alternatives analysis might be required under the new procedures. And we've also updated the application certification, the application to be compliant with the new procedures. We have been working with our internal staff to come up with another certification template that would be useful to the regional boards. And finally, we've updated the fee calculator for accessibility purposes and to be in conformance with the new fee regs and the dredge fill procedures. So all of that is housed on our website, which we have also reorganized to make information a little bit easier to find and to provide greater explanation to applicants. And so we've done a lot of work in the last in the last year on making sure that this procedures are implemented appropriately. So outside of the procedures implementation, we have been working with the Corps and the regional boards both separately and through the roundtables on implementation and coordination issues surrounding the new 401 rules. We will be working with our OCC staff to provide guidance on legal issues. Some of those legal issues are things like, okay, what are the options available under this new timeline that the Corps has put forward? And what do we need to do for in the event that we need to deny? And how do we appropriately write that denial so that we don't risk a waiver of denial from the Corps? So that's things that we're working on at State Board and with our Office of Chief Counsel. The Corps has actually been pretty good. The various districts of the Corps have actually been pretty good about reaching out to the various regional boards to discuss some of the administrative issues associated with coordination. State Board is participating in all of those meetings to figure out where we need to have a more statewide approach and where we can address things at a regional basis. Some of these issues are extremely mundane, such as, hey, who do you actually send the application to? What email box do you send it to? How do we make the communication go back and forth? And some of it has been at a much higher level, such as, okay, we are in agreement with Eric that the that the new guidelines that the Corps has put out about timelines are insufficient. And we have written our letter to the Corps protesting that and are pursuing what our legal actions are to address that moving forward. So the last thing that I wanted to mention to you is, along with the Corps' 401 regs, the Corps recently reissued their nationwide permits. So these are the permits that cover about 90% of what the Corps does. So these are permits for linear transportation projects that Caltrans might do. Installation of buoys in recreational lakes, construction of utility corridors, emergency response activities for post-fire. Most of these are done through a Corps nationwide permit, which is equivalent to our general permit. So these are issued on a five-year basis. This cycle, the Corps has opted to reissue these 2 years ahead of schedule. And so we have been working we had our first coordination meeting with the Corps in September of this year. That was our pre-filing notification. The Corps provided us the application on the middle of October with a requirement for us to provide certification within 60 days. So our certification is due to the Corps this upcoming Saturday. And that's why we've been all kind of pulling our hair out trying to figure out how to meet this. And that's why I don't have slides for you today. And I apologize for that. I will note that along with that, these nationwide permits are being reissued under the new 401 regs. So they provide the Corps the ability to limit our time to 60 days while simultaneously increasing the documentation requirements. We are on track to complete those by the deadline of this Saturday. We are largely certifying the same projects that we certified last time. We are making some changes. In some cases, those are merely organizational changes, but we are also, we worked with the roundtables to identify where we might be able to additionally certify low-risk, high-frequency permits. So specifically, certain small maintenance activities where there's a real low impact and they occur at a high frequency, and certain types of culvert replacements associated with linear transportation projects. So a modest expansion of the nationwide permit certifications so that we can address some of these, so that we can focus our activities on higher priority projects. So that is the summary of what we've been doing at the State Board, and I'm happy to take any questions from you. Ms. Cantu?
Yeah, please.
Thank you, Mr. Hahn. What do you think the likelihood of all of this work being done for naught, and we see in the next year kind of this being thrown out the window? I mean, this has been hotly discussed and debated for a long time, and reverting back to something that we did, 4 or 5 years ago.
Are you referring to the Dredger Fill procedures or to the federal rule changes?
The federal rule changes.
My crystal ball isn't really clear on that. I asked those same questions to my attorneys. I will tell you that we put forward some legal challenges to the Navigable Water Protection Rule. As of yet, we have not been successful at that. We have not yet legally challenged the new 401 rules. We have to wait until there's an actual project that's ripe to do that. We certainly have been in communication with the Corps. The local Corps folks are clearly working at the direction of the administration and don't have a lot of independent authority on this. I honestly don't know whether we'll be able to successfully challenge it in court. At this point, we're proceeding as if this is the new way that we've got to do our business. The one thing that I will say is, we have had a lot of discussions about our authorities under Porter Cologne. These 401 certifications also serve as waste discharge requirements under Port of Cologne. And so even under the worst case scenarios to come out of this, say, for example, the Corps waives a permit in whole, we can still fall back on the idea that, hey, we have waste discharge requirement authorities under Port of Cologne.
Thank you. Port of Cologne is a wonderful work.
Other questions of Mr. Hahn? Betty?
I just had a quick question. My question is, how long do these normally take? So they're changing the time period, but how long does it take to get one of these permits normally?
Yeah, we actually... We actually keep statistics on that. That's that we, your staff works with us to make sure that we're tracking these permits on a regular basis. Typically, our statewide average for these types of permits have been on the order of about 150 days, I believe is the current statistic. And of course, that's statewide across all types of projects. And there's a wide variability in how long things take. Something that some permits are done, you know, in as little as 15 days, many will take years, but our statewide average across all programs is about 150 days.
So the larger the project usually,
typically,
the more time
yes.
it takes.
Yeah.
And then I
Board have- Member Olson, if I could interject, an important part of that answer is where it is in the queue. A project that we receive may be in very good shape. It may have the avoidance, minimization, and mitigation measures we want. But if there are 15 or 20 projects in line ahead of it, when we actually start working on it and when that clock for us really starts ticking in terms of turnaround time may vary between projects and in terms of the environment they enter into. A shortage of staff has always been a critical issue in this program. And we have borrowed from non-point source, from stormwater, from waste discharge requirements to make out a complete unit of this. But with the new policy and with the new regulations, trying to do this on the cheap will really not work out, I think, for any of us. This is one of the areas where we really do need to consider new position authority to properly implement and effectively implement these, both for water quality and for customer service for the applicants who deserve to be able to get an answer from us in a predictable period of time.
I agree with that. I just wanted to ask also, one of the individuals said they have not yet moved off the 90 days. So is the Army Corps or is the administration? I just didn't understand.
Absolutely. Under the new rules, the Corps is required to provide us what's called a reasonable period of time to complete our certification. And I'm getting a little deeper into the weeds. Under that reasonable period of time, the Corps has told us that once we have the application, we will have 60 days. Now, you get to 90 because you add that 60 to another 30-day pre-filing notice. And so it ends up being about 90 in total. But to answer your question directly, it's the Corps of Engineers that tells us, hey, this is how long you have. As of yet, there is no appeals process to that. And we have responded to the Corps that we think that that's inappropriate for most projects. And the Corps has said, I'm sorry, that's the way it is. So we will see. But it does need to be done individually on a project-by-project basis. And there may be projects where the Corps says, hey, here's a project that's going to require additional time. And they've given us a guidance letter that provide some situations where they may give more time. Frankly, it's a very small minority of what we would do.
So I just have one other question, and it goes back to what Dave said. So if I have a very simplistic, small project, I think one was referred to as maintenance, I have to wait in the queue behind everyone else. There's no way to streamline based on type of project, so you're spending your time on what you need to and not just, I know you're spending your time on what you need to, but in other words, is there a way to facilitate if it's simple?
Board Member Olson, yes, thank you. We don't take strictly a pull a number, wait your turn approach. Uh-huh. We have developed a short certification for smaller, less intensive projects that the staff can turn around much faster. And we do juggle the load. So we look at projects in terms of priority, impacts, the completeness of the application. And so we do advance those projects that we can early when they're relatively minor. And we use the short certification process to do that. But when we look at the whole of the projects, we are looking at a range of projects. Some of them are fairly substantial when they're submitted to us. And often lacking in basic information. For example, CEQA compliance. The new regulations don't imagine that CEQA plays a role in this. And if this project is otherwise prepared to go, but CEQA has not been satisfied and certified by a lead agency, officially we can't act upon that 401 certification. One of the other questions I would like to ask Mr. Hahn to address is that I truly don't know certainly the answer. Maybe we just haven't figured it out yet. But if in the course of this, the Water Board denies a project, Army Corps, as I understand it, has the option to review that decision and decide for themselves whether it was appropriate. And deciding that it wasn't, they can issue, they can decide that the state waived it and take action on their own. That is where I'm particularly concerned about the shift of burden of proof from the applicant to the Water Board and to Army Corps.
Yeah, this is something that we are all trying to figure out exactly how this works, and we haven't gotten a lot of clear direction from the Corps, in part because the Corps staff here are with us, that we're all trying to figure this out. What we know at this point is that the rules are written to require us to do a couple of specific things. The first one is we need to be able to identify why a condition relates to our specific authorities under either the Clean Water Act or under our state authorities. And we need to be able to identify why we would deny something using, again, that same rationale that we've got to connect it to water quality and we've got to be able to connect it to some specific authorities. And if we are denying it based on solely a lack of information, we need to be specific about what kinds of information we need. So what we have heard and what we interpret the rule to mean is that the Corps' role in this will be largely just determining whether or not we have met our legal obligation to connect the dots, and that the Corps does not have discretion to disagree with the merits of our argument. Whether it plays out that way, frankly, we don't know.
Mr. Hahn, may I ask you a question?
Yes.
What congressional committee has authority over this change?
I'm sorry, sir. I don't know the answer to that, but I will find out and get it and let you know.
Okay, and in particular, if there's anybody in the Southern California delegation, that would be interesting because we have discussions with them on international issues and EPA issues quite frequently. Okay. Well, that was cheery.
it's a new world for sure. We're all trying to figure out how to do this.
Okay, well, check back with us on January 22nd.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your time. Eric, thank you for the report.
Oh, thank you.
I believe that is the end of what I anticipated to be a longer meeting, but here it is.
Board Member Barbanel.
Oh, Robin.
Would you like to see if there are any members of the public who would wish to provide the board comments on this item?
Okay. We don't usually get comments on informational items, but certainly welcome.
Okay, thank you. If any member of the public would like to speak, please virtually raise your hand in Zoom or press *9 on your phone now. Please remember to state your name for the record before you speak. Board Chair Barbanel, I am not seeing any members of the public wishing to address the board.
Okay, thank you, Roger, for reminding us. I believe that is the end of our meeting. I wish everybody a happy whatever holiday you celebrate it and however you celebrate it at this time. Everybody keep safe and we'll see you in February. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.